up? You're listening to Hypocritical, a podcast by Hypocritic GG. I'm Lou, some call me Cheatspeak, and it's time to talk about the Nintendo Switch 2. Just like everyone else with a thought in their head and a mic in front of them, it's time to dig into all of those announcements, all of those reveals, with how volatile things have been as of, you know, the time we're recording this, late April 2025. We wanted to let the dust settle a little bit. We wanted to have a chance to fully understand what this pre-order cycle and the launch cycle is going to look like for this console, Nintendo's first console release in nearly a decade and moving to the next generation. And now that we're kind of out of the weeds of it, we want to focus on a lot of what has been the primary topic of conversation around the Switch 2, which is price. But from a different perspective, not just what was announced and not just what is on offer immediately at launch, but how this strategy compares to console and game pricing over time and what that may mean for the Switch 2 and the success of the hardware and software on it as its life cycle commences. So let's get rolling. The number one takeaway I think that most people had from the reveal of the Nintendo Switch 2, its games, its accessories, was that things got expensive. And there's kind of no dancing around that fact. Breaking it down, the Switch 2 hardware itself, I think, was very intelligently divided up into two SKUs, two different sort of bundles and packages. There at the higher end and the more popular end of it is the $499 kind of full fat model with a digital copy of Mario Kart World included, which we will certainly talk about. And then a sort of more stripped down, cost effective version. Think of it as quote unquote a base model for $450 that basically just doesn't have the game included. What is important to note here is that both of those, whether you get the $450 model or the $500 model with Mario Kart built in, it's the same hardware, it's the same Switch 2, it's the same accessories, it's the same RAM, it's the same storage, same console in the box, just whether or not you get Mario Kart included with it. The fact stands, though, that this is quite a bit more than the $300 price point that the original Switch launched at in 2017 and still sells for today. And, you know, not including the inflation conversation, which we will certainly get into, it is a pretty significant jump compared, you know, apples to apples. There's also the discussion on games, and this is where a lot of the negativity has been. If there's going to, you know, point to any negativity on it, this is where it was. Nintendo is adopting aggressively, seemingly, a variable pricing model for new releases, where there will almost be a sliding scale that will determine what games release at depending on what Nintendo believes the value in the box is. So it's not, you know, that expected $50, $60, $70-ish dollar price point anymore. It will vary, ranging from digitally now, $70 to $80 for a digital copy of a game with, kind of most disappointingly, a $10 upcharge for quote-unquote physical copies of the game. And I put physical in quotes because that can go one of two ways. Either an actual physical copy where all of the data is on the game cart itself, or what Nintendo calls a game key card, where the cart in the package that you buy pretty much just fast tracks an eShop download when you put it into your console. There's no actual game data on that card in all likelihood. There's nothing you can play. You just pop it in, download the game, and it kind of pretends to be that physical copy. So no matter what the experience is, whether there's game data on there or not, you're paying $10 more to have that physical copy in your hand. And in the game key card instance, you're basically paying to have the piece of plastic and the box sitting on your shelf. Now, that almost merits its own separate discussion and would obviously be very frustrating if you're a champion of physical media and likes, you know, displaying your entire collection. So you can absolutely argue that that is kind of unfair and maybe a little bit greedy on Nintendo's part, which we will discuss. But the fact remains that generally across the board, games on Nintendo Switch 2 will be more expensive than we've seen from not just Nintendo, but other publishers and manufacturers, more expensive than we've seen in quite some time. But this is where I want to start to offer a little bit of historical perspective, where, you know, maybe this isn't something that comes up as often. It's not an element of it that people think about, but games back in the day, let's say old man yells at cloud about it, used to be a lot more expensive. And you think back even, you know, 25, 30, 40 years ago, when an entirely separate generation of gamers were growing up in an entirely different sort of set of world circumstances, gaming was not cheap. And indulging in video games as a hobby or as a passion cost a lot more than it has for the past couple of decades. I want to use a few examples using Nintendo's own very popular games as reference points, again, just to kind of set the stage a little bit. We're going to go all the way back to the NES, Super Mario Bros. 3, an absolute classic, late in the life cycle NES game, lauded across the board, right? That launched somewhere around $49.99, $50 in 1990. If you were to do a little bit of math on that, thanks to inflation, in 2025, that would go for $120 or thereabouts, which is pretty significant. Similarly, Super Mario Kart, a massive system seller for the Super Nintendo, incredibly popular game, launched at about $54.99 in 1992. These are all US dollars, I should say. With inflation and comparatively, that is $125 in 2025. So again, really not cheap. Best correlation potentially, Super Mario 64. A linchpin moment, a massive system seller, a big branded Mario game at launch of a Nintendo console, $59.99 or thereabouts in 1996. With inflation, that's about $120 in 2025. Now, there was variable pricing on a lot of these first and third party releases as well, but you can see a lot of those marquee titles settled in around the $120 to $130 price point when compared, you know, in 2025, which is, I think, an interesting bit of perspective. Here's another extreme example, maybe. You remember Phantasy Star 4 on the Genesis? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. Pretty significant game for that console. It was $100 at retail in 1995. That would be $210 in 2025. Can you imagine paying $200 plus for a game? Sometimes feels like we're not that far off from that as we record this here, but that was the reality for buying games and experiencing what the industry had to offer, you know, back in those days. It really wasn't until the late 90s or the early 2000s, especially around, you know, the PS2, the GameCube, the Xbox, the Dreamcast, when discs became the standard, you know, media of choice for the gaming industry, that costs really came down and remained what was kind of uncharacteristically low for generations. Cartridge manufacturing was a major part of why games were so expensive back then. And by shedding that part of the process and moving to optical media, a lot of those costs were no longer relevant. And gaming became suddenly a lot more affordable and accessible than it had been up to that point. And because of that, where we have gone kind of multiple console generations with very few, if any, price hikes on games in that sense, we've gotten used to games not just being cheaper than history would commonly suggest, but consistently priced without significant increases for such a long time. You know, we've gone multiple console generations now without a really significant hike past that $60 price point in a lot of cases. And it's only in the past couple of years that 70 has only really become the norm. So to see that continued march so much faster than we're used to, it feels like we just went to 70 as the norm. Now we're talking 80, now we're talking 90 with a physical copy. Rumor is that GTA 6 is going to launch at $100. Whether or not it actually is, depending on when you're listening to that, you tell us if we got that right. It's a lot to swallow, especially considering the context of the past couple of decades. It is a tough pill for people to have to swallow. And that's the reality of the situation. But it's not just the games. Consoles have had an interesting kind of arc through time in terms of their value and their cost as well. And if you do a little bit of that similar inflation-based research, we could honestly have an entire episode just digging into the sort of economics of this stuff. Game consoles historically, at launch across time, have generally, for the most part, I would say the majority of them, have hovered at or a bit below the $500 price point in 2025 money. So whatever that equivalent would have been in its time. So while the Switch 2's pricing is generally in line with much of the rest of the industry across time, and it really isn't that much of an outlier, if at all, the fact remains that it's still, in its own time, the most relatively expensive Nintendo console since the NES. You know, as of the time of this recording, over 40 years ago. And that, again, is challenging for people who are not used to that level of investment required in something like this, because it has been such a long time since we've had to face that kind of situation. And the third pillar of this, it's not just the console, it's not just the games. Accessories, in a key point, are also more expensive than their Switch 1 counterparts. I want to lay out a couple of examples here just to sort of underline this point. We won't spend too much time on it, but you compare apples to apples across generations. The Pro Controller 2 for the Switch 2 with its, you know, added triggers on the back and the C button, $84.99 at retail with the recent kind of tariff adjustments in the US. That's up from $70 for the original Pro Controller. That's 21% more expensive. A set of Joy-Con 2 controllers, the basic kind of controllers for the game, $94.99, nearly $100 for that controller set, up from $80 for the original Joy-Cons, 18% more expensive. The dock set, which now includes its own AC adapter and an HDMI cable, $120, up from $60 from the original Switch, which was, in fairness, dock only. So while that is twice as expensive, it's a little bit, you know, that's not as much apples to apples. You do some annoying math, $35 for an AC adapter, $10 for an HDMI cable. That Nintendo Switch package for the original looks more like $105, $110. Still a fair bit of a gulf. What's the point of all this? Why bring this up? Why have this context? What are you driving at, right? Well, objectively, if you look at a lot of these trends and patterns across time, how the industry has sort of evolved and where these price points have sort of sat, the Nintendo Switch 2 is not incredibly far off from what history would have you suggest consoles and games typically cost. But that said, why then does every player and every commentator and every media personality out there feel like it's all so damn expensive, all things considered? And the simple answer to that is because it is. It's all really damn expensive. And that's the reality of the world that we're living in, again, here in late April 2025, as I record this. The world is incredibly sensitive to price fluctuations, to inflation, to the general cost of anything. And U.S. consumers, again, speaking from our home territory here, have less buying power than seemingly any time in recent memory. And it's a challenging situation to have to consider when the games and the console and the accessories feel that expensive. We're not an economics podcast. I'm not going to break down the macro and micro factors that go into this sort of thing. But inflation has obviously hit not just the gaming industry, but the entire world very hard. You even look at it relative to something like the original Switch's launch price. $299 still sells for that today. But if it were to launch at that same value prop in 2025, in 2025 dollars, it would cost a little under $400, maybe around $390 or so as I record this. So that alone is a really interesting harbinger of how much things have changed and how quickly the world has sort of spiraled in that sense. Now, I will posit something a little bit interesting. This might be a bit of a hot take. It's not true in all cases. I'll try to earmark some of the exceptions and places where the theory doesn't make much sense. But this is one way I think that you can potentially look at it and frame the entire discussion. Since at least the GameCube, when the console really wasn't very successful and it was very steeply discounted, Nintendo has been seen as a brand, especially from a hardware perspective, with a strong value proposition and was often the most affordable option for customers and consumers looking for getting the most bang for their buck. You think less well-off players, people who don't have infinite money, which is basically all of us, have often relied on this affordability for access not just to Nintendo's hardware, but to the software and the experiences you can have on their platforms. Families, who are the primary targets of many of Nintendo's, you know, child and family-friendly IPs, are in a very similar boat. They're often very budget-conscious shoppers who need to stretch that dollar as far as they can, and a lot of the time, Nintendo's consoles have provided a very effective, easy, and reliable way to do that. So while not completely out of touch with the market where it stands today, the Nintendo Switch 2 is not really that dramatically more affordable option that perhaps we've been used to with Nintendo's hardware offerings across time. You know, the games are currently more expensive than exclusives on other platforms. And I would expect that this will correct over time and that publishers and manufacturers on other platforms will bring themselves in line now that Nintendo's kind of ripped the Band-Aid off. But at the moment, yeah, Nintendo, it's going to cost more than likely to play a game on the Switch 2 than it might elsewhere. Their accessories are pricier than other competitors, in some cases dramatically so. You know, you're talking $90 or up, you know, close to $100 for some controllers for your Switch 2. An Xbox One controller, as of now, probably $50, maybe less. PlayStation 5 controllers, DualShock 5s, whatever they're called, routinely $70 or less. So you don't have that monetary advantage like you used to. And the handheld gaming space in that market has gotten a lot more competitive in recent years. You look at something like the Steam Deck, where you can get a non-OLED model for well under $400, and ROG Ally, well under $400, with access to probably cheaper games and cheaper accessories to boot. So it's the Switch 2 really isn't the most affordable kit on the block anymore. And that's a bit of a change from how Nintendo has typically structured and presented a lot of their products. And when you consider this, the price hikes on the games in particular is where it kind of feels most egregious. Considering how Nintendo's first-party titles across time really hold their value exceptionally well and rarely, if ever, go on sale. And when they do, those savings are often minimal, and they're probably targeted toward less popular games or less popular IPs or third-party products from third-party developers or publishers that feature one of Nintendo's characters or one of their franchises or something like that. You're much more likely to see a sale on something like a Mario and Rabbids game before you see something on Breath of the Wild or Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, if you see where I'm going with that. So it's challenging when you're now essentially being asked to pay, in some cases, $80 or $90 for something like a Mario Kart World or whatever inevitably follows, where it will likely sit at that price point for the lifetime of the system, if not beyond. We still see that today with games like Breath of the Wild, still routinely $60 at retail. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, $60. Whatever those price points are, that's, you know, 7-8 years of time that it hasn't budged, and it's not going to, because that's typically how Nintendo's games work in the marketplace. All of that is to say that accessibility and mass market appeal may become a legitimate concern over time for cost-conscious players. And it's possible, though arguably not probable, based on how pre-orders have gone, that all of this sort of increases the risk of pricing out some of those mainstream mass market consumers that the brand has thrived on and relied on for so long. And I say, you know, it may not really ultimately amount to much, because at least as of the time of this recording, pre-orders have been wildly successful. Estimates are that there will be somewhere between 6 and 8 million pieces of hardware out there at launch. It's projected to be the most successful video game console launch in history. So all of this pearl clutching and sweating about it may be for naught, because it's more than likely going to sell gangbusters. It's going to do incredibly well, and none of this discussion about price may move the needle or matter at all. But I still think that it's worth discussing and holding in the back of your head, because the sort of unfortunate timing of things and the volatile economics of it all aside, there are elements of this launch strategy and pricing strategy that feel a bit overindulgent or greedy on Nintendo's part. And while ultimately largely the right approach, given the challenging circumstances that the console is launching in, you have evolution over revolution. It's more Super Nintendo Switch than some radically new paradigm shift for Nintendo, right? With that and all of these price increases, you may find consumers over time struggling to understand what the value proposition really is. Is that a harbinger of things to come? Again, probably not. This thing's going to sell like crazy. The pre-orders have been insane. Might all be for nothing. But it's still worth calling out those sort of business practices that are uncomfortable, potentially a little anti-consumer or anti-customer, and just feel kind of gross when you see them, no matter who's doing it. And in this day and age where people are really cost conscious about that dollar, it's worth discussing, no matter who's doing it, no matter how it affects you, whether you're planning on getting the console or not, something worth keeping in the back of your head. Which is a perfect segue, it's almost like that was planned or something, into our post-show discussion topics this time around. What do you think of this whole mess? What were your thoughts when the Nintendo Switch's pricing strategy was announced? The Switch 2, I mean. Did you end up pre-ordering it? Do you have one in your hands now as you're recording it? Why or why not? What has turned you on or off about the entire process? Sound off in our Discord. Let us know what you think. It's a really interesting one, and I think we would love to get your feedback on it. Hypocritic.gg is your hub for all things Hypocritic. Check out our live streams, convention coverage, video reviews, industry interviews, and more. And join our Discord community, where you can react to topics we discuss here on the podcast and get the inside scoop on what's coming next from us. Thanks so much for listening. Stay fresh, cheesebags. We'll catch you back here real soon.